Welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I am Sabrina Halverson. Coming up later in the show, I talk with a Fresno County farmer with a passion for making sure farming continues in California for generations to come. But to start today, we have a couple of important announcements that came in through my email inbox. This coming from the State Water Resources Control Board, first coming in yesterday afternoon. They say, with California experiencing a historic drought amid worsening climate change impacts, the state is responding urgently to address acute water supply shortfalls in affected areas. Water in Lake Mendocino is below minimum storage levels and dropping at an alarming rate, threatening supplies for drinking water and endangered fisheries. In response, the State Water Resources Control Board issued curtailment orders on Monday to all 861 water rights holders in the Upper Russian River. The orders make it illegal to draw or divert water from the Upper Russian River, except as needed to ensure human health and safety. The State Water Board also released an analysis of the Lower Russian River, demonstrating that approximately 222 right holders need to be curtailed to meet demands on the river. The board anticipates issuing orders to these right holders next week. The deputy director for the Division of Water Rights, Eric Ekdahl, said the lake is declining much faster than anticipated, and if the depletions continue at this rate, the 20,000 acre-feet end-of-season minimum storage level could be reached almost 6 weeks ahead of schedule. The lake could be entirely empty by the end of the year, putting both people and wildlife in harm's way, he said. Another important announcement coming out, the state is warning organic farmers against the use of pesticides labeled as WOW, Whack Out Weeds, and Ecomite Pro. Those are distributed by Ecomite. As lab tests have shown that these products labeled as organic, natural, and glyphosate-free do in fact contain potentially hazardous chemicals. The California Department of Pesticide Regulation issued a notice to Ecomite LLC, which is a Florida-based company, that it may be in violation of state law by manufacturing, delivering, or selling unregistered pesticide products in California. The California Department of Food and Agriculture issued a stop-use notice for organic growers about Ecomite products. The United States Environmental Protection Agency also notified Ecomite that it might be in violation of federal law. Ecomite currently markets its products as organic, natural, glyphosate-free, and non-toxic and safe. However, state laboratory analysis of the Whack Out Weeds, or WOW, and Ecomite products sold in California found that the product tested contained potentially hazardous chemicals, including glyphosate and others. California-registered pesticides that contain those chemicals go through scientific review and have very specific requirements for use and personal protective equipment that protects workers, communities, and the environment from unwanted pesticide exposure. The Whack Out Weeds and Ecomite Pro do not contain any safety instructions. The synthetic chemical compounds CDFA laboratory analysis found in those products are prohibited for use in organic production by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Organic Program. Additionally, these products pose a public health risk because the products were found to contain hazardous chemicals that are not disclosed on their labels. In addition to the actions taken by the California state agencies, U.S. EPA notified Ecomite that it might be in violation of the federal law by manufacturing, distributing, and selling unregistered pesticide products. As part of its enforcement of the law, U.S. EPA registers pesticide products and approves label language before any pesticide can be sold or distributed. The agency's goal, it says, is to provide clear directions for effective product performance while minimizing the risks to human health and the environment. Another important announcement today, the U.S. Department of Agriculture is investing $15 million for a new drought pilot to assist agricultural producers impacted by the worsening drought conditions to provide relief to impacted California and Oregon producers in the Klamath River Basin. The announcement comes as U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack will travel to Oregon for events focused on drought and wildfire resiliency on Tuesday. The Klamath Project's A Canal will remain closed this year because of a lack of water supply. The canal is a major component of the Klamath Project, and it typically provides access to Upper Klamath Lake, supplying water for more than 200,000 acres of farmland. The block grant for the Klamath River Drought Response Agency, or the Klamath DRA, will provide payments to producers to reduce irrigation demand. This will assist in allowing the limited supply of water to be used for other practices that are vital to the region's food supply and to reduce adverse impacts to producers in the region and supply and distribution chains. Producers will apply for funding through the Klamath DRA. USDA will evaluate the outcomes to help inform future program design and will continue to monitor basins and drought conditions to determine where additional funds may best provide immediate economic support and relief to producers. Now, those are our top stories for the day. Our news brief is up next. We will be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. The Crop Consultant Conference returns live in person on September 16th and 17th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this must-attend conference features 2 days of educational seminars, a live trade show, and honorariums and scholarships given by Western CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Hear the top experts in their field speak on pest management, artificial intelligence and new technologies, as well as the latest on soil health, nitrogen, and irrigation management. DPR and CCA credits will be available over the 2 days. For more information on credits, topics, and registration, visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
Welcome back. Here's your news for today. The Environmental Protection Agency and the Army announced plans for community engagements to let people know about their efforts to revise the definition of WOTUS, or Waters of the U.S. rule. The goal of the rewrite is to better ensure clean and safe water for everyone. The EPA and the Army say they are committed to developing a reasonable, effective, and durable definition of WOTUS that protects public health, the environment, and downstream communities, while supporting economic opportunity, agriculture, and other industries. EPA Administrator Michael Regan says, "We will craft an enduring definition of WOTUS by listening to all sides so that we can build on an inclusive foundation." A data platform for those involved in transport of our nation's ag goods recently upgraded to its 3.0 stage, which includes more real-time information. Rud Bain reports.
Congestion continues at several of our nation's West Coast ports. Backlogs of cargo, including ag shipments, awaiting transport to their destination. Yet ag transportation stakeholders, whether producer or shipper, now have expanded data sets available to make important decisions.
User can easily go on the platform, filter down to specific ports and commodities, and run that data themselves and get an idea of like what's happening on the port situation on the West Coast or across the country even. And a lot of them have been using that data to help give them a sense of the situation. Is it normal? Are we paying too much? How's this impacting our market situation right now?
What Adam Sparger of USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service is referring to is the latest edition of the Agriculture Department's Agricultural Transportation Open Data Visualization Platform. Since its rollout in 2019, AMS has continued to improve the amount and variety of data available regarding the four major modes of ag transportation.
We were looking at, like, how can we bring more value to like this treasure trove of data that we're sitting on? How can we put that directly into the hands of our stakeholders and sort of put those analytical tools in their hands and bring more value to our data sets?
So in the case of what is dubbed Ag Transport 3.0, innovation has increased the amount of real-time data available for market-based decisions, as well as presentation methods such as dashboards that improve ease of understanding of information.
Dashboards on rail service metrics, kind of indicating train speed, congestion, supply and demand for grain cars. We've got rail pricing metrics for tariff and fuel data, auction market data, same for the barge industry metrics on movements and volumes through different locks and different river tributaries, and truck movements of produce and grain and pricing, same for ocean vessel movements at ports and loadings.
New data sets offer information on areas such as highway infrastructure and grain transportation cost indicators. As Sparger adds, all the data within the Ag Transport Open Data Platform is free for use.
It's at our website. If you just type into your web browser, agtransport, all one word, .usda.gov, and then from there we have a landing page. and that'll take you to all the different dashboards for the different aspects of our data sets, as well as our digitized reports, and it's very user-friendly.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Last week, Texas Republican Representative August Pfluger introduced the bipartisan RAPID Act. RAPID stands for Reimbursing Agriculture Producers for Immigration Damages. Other members of the Texas congressional delegation signed on to the bill to help create a reimbursement program for producers that incur losses caused by illegal border crossings. Under the bill, producers could be reimbursed for livestock losses, damage to fences or physical structures, or property losses, all of which currently occur at the border due to those crossing the border illegally. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association is grateful to the lawmakers who are supporting policies that protect cattle farmers and ranchers who are simply trying to raise not only their livestock, they say, but their families on the land. A coalition of 70 groups has filed a formal petition with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to relist the gray wolf on the Endangered Species Act. The gray wolf has been protected under the act since 1978, and since then, wolf populations have risen in several states, including California, Illinois, Minnesota, and many others. On January 4th of this year, the Fish and Wildlife Service announced that the gray wolf had recovered to the point it was no longer an endangered species. That means the management of the wolf populations would return to the states. The Sierra Nevada Daily says the petition calls for Fish and Wildlife Service to protect the wolves in the western U.S. as a distinct population segment. The groups say that the wolves remain completely absent from suitable habitats or perilously close to extinction in many western states, and the handful of states surrounding Yellowstone National Park are now driving the larger populations toward extinction. The U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement went into effect in 2020, and it was widely hailed as an improvement on the North American Free Trade Agreement. But Ryan LeGrand, the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council, says USMCA has not been without challenges.
First of all, we're certainly glad to have an agreement in place with our two top trading partners in Canada and Mexico. But yes, it's not without its challenges. Mexico's government has put decrees in place stating that they're going to ban glyphosate, stating that they're going to ban genetically modified corn for human food consumption. And that's a real problem. It's a real problem for us, and it's a real problem for Mexico also.
He says Mexico is making some bad decisions.
When you consider that Mexico imports about 40% of its grain needs, and then you think about them cutting out glyphosate and cutting their own yields by 20 to 30%, that's only going to increase their dependence on imported grains. And to be frank, they cannot find the amount that they need to import in non-GMO. They can't find it. It's not going to come from Brazil or Argentina, that's GMO. It's not going to come from halfway across the world from Ukraine. It just won't be affordable if it is even non-GMO.
LeGrand says that the U.S. and Mexican governments have to work together to get these issues solved. He says U.S. Grains Council is doing its part to help that resolution through educational efforts.
We certainly have. We've been in touch with Mexican government, with Mexican feed industry and livestock industry in attempts to get some grassroots support down there from the Mexican buyers to tell their government, look, we can't do this. We need to continue to import timely and affordable grains from the United States.
Again, Ryan LeGrand is the president and CEO of the U.S. Grains Council. How is the farm economy doing? Well, ask the farm lenders. Gary Crawford has this report.
Let's go back 105 years.
What is there to do? One is keeping open to the whole people the doors of opportunity.
The doors of opportunity being open to the nation's farmers as then-President Woodrow Wilson signed the Federal Farm Loan Act, creating the Farm Credit System July 1916. Must have been a lot of celebration among farmers that day, right?
I wasn't around at that time.
But he is now. Glenn Smith, Iowa farmer, currently chairman of the Farm Credit Administration, FCA, which oversees the farm credit system, a network of institutions created to meet the unique credit needs of people in the chancy business of farming.
The mission from the start was to be there in good times and bad.
And now, 105 years later, he says those institutions serve over a third of U.S. farmers. FCA has just come out with a great interactive timeline covering farm credit history from the 1700s down to almost the present. It's online at fca.gov. Of course, part of very recent history is last year when the COVID-19 pandemic really kicked in.
Things started shutting down. We didn't know what we were in for.
Would 2020 be disastrous for farm credit system borrowers and for the system itself? Glenn Smith says quite the opposite.
The system actually had an extremely good year, as it turned out.
Smith told us that going into COVID, the system's institutions had strong levels of capital on hand.
That was reassurance that we were going to come through this in good shape.
And so now, more than halfway through 2021, Smith says the farm credit system is about as strong as it's ever been. But what about the farmers and the farm economy it serves?
The overall farm economy is in remarkably good shape.
And if you want to know the financial condition of farmers and the economy, ask the lenders. And the farm credit system does about 45% of the ag lending in this country. And Glenn Smith told us there are several reasons for his rosy assessment. First, looking at the number of borrowers not able to make their payments.
Right now, we're at the lowest level in 15 years. So pretty good indication we're in good shape, Gary.
Also, on the income side for farmers, Glenn Smith says between the government payments at the end of last year to make up for trade disruptions and rising commodity prices,
2020 ended up on an extremely positive note, and starting out in 2021, equally positive.
And in fact, he says he's almost positive about this projection for this year's farm income.
I think we'll have a record year.
Well, we'll see. This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
That's our news for today. We will be right back.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
Welcome back. I chatted recently with a Fresno County farmer who has a passion for making sure that farming continues in California for generations to come. Here's that conversation.
Yeah, my name is Nick Rocca, and I farm in Fresno County, and I also work for a farming company that farms all over the state. So I live and farm personally in Fresno County and then work for a larger farm that farms all over.
All right. So what do you grow?
My family and I am a fourth generation raisin grape farmer from the Biola Kerman area. And we are in raisin grapes, almonds, and I actually grow pumpkins now.
Pumpkins. Oh, my gosh. I love pumpkins. But I have tried, my husband and I have tried to grow just in a garden to grow pumpkins. And it is... I have been completely unsuccessful. It's terrible.
Oh, no.
Totally kills my ego every time I try.
I don't know where you're located in the state, but pumpkins are not – they're hard. They're hard to grow.
Thank you. And that helps me.
I've learned the hard way, so don't feel bad. I'm on my seventh year of figuring it out, and I think I learn something new every year.
So what kind of pumpkins do you grow?
Oh, gosh, we have 15 varieties from anything from the large giant Big Macs and polar bear large giant wine ones all the way down to the mini whites and minis and everything in between. So if you've seen it, we probably grow it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
How many acres do you have for pumpkins?
This year we only have 3 whole acres, so buckle your seatbelt because it's a lot.
I know.
No, yeah, we're a small pumpkin boutique, but we on our little pumpkin farm, we have created a kind of agritourism business.
Nice. Okay.
In the sense where we rent out the patch for private events or invite our family and friends over for a big day, 500 or so people come over, and we do food trucks and pumpkin patch and hayride. And so we haven't fully opened it up to the public yet, but that's in the works. It's in my backyard, so it's kind of hard to manage, like, the public walking in my backyard, you know.
Yeah, I can imagine. That would cause issues. And then also I've chatted with some other people that have agritourism involved on their farms, and it just brings in a whole new level of paperwork and insurance.
That's right. And so we're figuring that out as we go. Mm-hmm. And so we have kind of treaded lightly on the full-fledged, come to our farm, spend a day, and regardless of who you are, only because we want to be, we want to be cautious of the liability side of things. But other than that, we've had a lot of fun doing it.
That's really nice. So, and you said as far as tree nuts go, you grow over almonds, is that right?
Yeah, almonds. And so my dad and I have a management company, and we do farm management. So we farm some outside almonds and grapes for raisins. And we also own raisin grapes as well. So we are diversified in the farming side of things for him and I. Mm-hmm. And then every year during harvest, we are owner operator on a commercial grape harvesting company as well. So we just, commercial grape harvesting contractors, more or less.
So how did you get started? You said you're fourth generation.
Fourth generation. And that's a good question, because I graduated from high school in 2007. And at that time, my dad was farming raisins like he is now. And his comment to me was, this is not a good time to go into farming, because prices were way down. We were about to hit a recession in 2008. So he was like, go to school and do like a business degree. So I was a water polo player and actually went to a school in Southern California, California Baptist University, to play water polo. And so I was there for a few years, and then due to an injury, moved home and quit playing water polo. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to work on the family farm, like this rah, rah, sis, boom, bah type moment. And then my dad, no, you're not. So he did not allow me to take the easy road and just come work for the family farm. So he said, if you're going to go into this and really take it, you need to go cut your teeth working for someone else. So made me go find a job. And so I went to work for a commercial wine grape harvesting company, and was kind of helping manage some wine grape crews with that. And then that led into working for a couple other medium-sized farms, doing some, just basic working for a farm. It wasn't nothing special, tractor work, irrigation, harvesting raisins, that type of thing. But all the while was really wanting to create the same legacy that my grandpa and my dad kind of had created. And so I'm thankful in the long run that my dad forced me not to just take the easy road and come work for him and, drive around in a truck and just be a glorified truck driver.
Mm-hmm.
That he really made me cut my teeth and learn the trade and learn things the hard way, And so then that ended up, fast forward another 4 or 5 years, I was approached about managing my own ranch for the first time, and then that kind of grew into more, and that grew into more, and then we started a farm management side of our family business, and that really turned into a pretty successful business right now as it is. My dad actually worked for Sun Made Growers of California for a number of years. And he was able to kind of retire from them and come back and just completely farm full time, which is his, that's his passion, if you've ever met him. So then, I'm working for the family farm and I'm loving every second of it and all the while I'm just, people will know that have been in farming, you don't get into farming like that because you want to make a ton of money. And I felt like I was working a ton and not making a ton of money. So good friend of mine who's a financial advisor at one point said, hey, have you ever thought about just getting a job? And I was like, no, because I'm a farmer, right? I was like, no, I have a job, right? And so there was an opportunity that came up to work for was approached about doing some helping with some consulting on some pesticide applications, some spraying, and started working for this other company. And that turned into being hired at the company I work for now, which is Sun Pacific Farming, and they're located out of Bakersfield. And so now I work I farm all this. I farm with my dad, do all the family farming, and my full-time job is that I work for Sun Pacific Farming, and I'm there. I'm a kind of a equipment specialist, more or less a spray specialist. I help oversee the pesticide application on for our farms, and we farm in the 40,000 acre range. So it's I feel like I live in my truck most days, but it's fun. It's all over, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
So you get to see quite a bit of the state with all of your farming operations.
Yes, yeah, I do. We farm from the majority of it is from Kern County to Fresno County, with a little bit down near Coachella, and as far south as Coachella and as north as Yuba County and Butte County.
Well, that does cover most of the state then.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, my poor truck has seen better days.
So with your day job, what do you guys grow there?
So Sun Pacific Farms, majority is citrus. And if you've had a cutie in the store, that's what we grow, is cuties. And then we also grow kiwi fruit, table grapes, pistachios, walnuts, and then there's a little bit of contracted fresh market tomatoes actually out on the west side. And then the last thing that's not as big, but we have a little bit of avocado and stone fruit as well.
And then what did you say that your title with them or your position with them is?
I'm a equipment specialist, which just we're like the equipment manager. So okay. Assist the farming team in helping them oversee their equipment and manage, help the guys and on the spraying side of things, really just develop a spraying plan. When the majority of a farming budget is spent on labor and on integrated pest management, right? And so I'm a part of that team that helps make sure that we're doing things the right way and using the equipment the right way and spraying the right way. So spray specialist is more of an apropos term, I guess, for what my job is at the company I work for.
We're going to pause for a brief sponsor message. We will be right back.
Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Root Pack R almond, grizzly walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and platinum clonal pistachio rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Root Pack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org. Together we grow.
Welcome back. We continue our conversation now with Nick Rocca.
So are you're a Farm Bureau member? Or are you involved somehow?
Yeah, so I was recently Fresno County Young Farmers and Ranchers Chair, and then I transitioned out of the Young Farmers and Ranchers onto the full board. So now I'm actually the incoming secretary of the Fresno County Farm Bureau on the executive committee. And so that would be kind of the track to eventually be the president of the Fresno County Farm Bureau in the next 6 to 8 years.
And that's your goal?
Yeah, absolutely. I My grandfather was on the board, my dad was on the board, and I have a passion for agriculture and what it kind of takes to make sure that ag makes it to the next generation. I feel like living in the state of California, we get caught up in the doom and gloom of regulation and the lack of water and all the what can't we do and what's bad and how bad it is. And I really just, my goal is to be a part of the what can we do and what, how can we help, and you know, collective voice will always be louder than a singular voice. And the Farm Bureau organization is a grassroots member driven organization that supports the farmer in multiple facets of their farming, and a lot of it has to do with like regulation and policy and things like that.
So you're passionate about, it sounds to me like you're passionate about making sure that farming continues into the next generation.
Absolutely. I mean, what agriculture at 30,000 feet has meant for my family over the last few generations has allowed us to serve our community and love on our kind of fellow neighbor in the sense that we you know, we're all human beings, number one, and so how can you be a part of your community and help and give back and do things? Well, agriculture has, being in farming has allowed us to be real involved in our church and be involved in other local organizations that promote healthy business in Fresno. I'm on the Fresno Chamber of Commerce board, and our job there is to make sure that businesses are surviving and thriving in Fresno County, and that the quality of life for people living in Fresno is good, that people want to stay in Fresno. And so really my passion for agriculture is that it would provide the same life that it's provided for me for other people, and that if we don't fight for it, unfortunately it won't survive. And we've already seen that through how our state is legislated and how our water is managed. And it seems like if we left it to its own devices, it would fail. And so we've got people that have made it their life goal to make sure that farming in California and in the United States is still has generations of viability. And so a lot of times I feel like I get the why that people sell their ranch and they move out of state, because there's a lot, and it's an economic decision for them. It breaks my heart, because I wish it wasn't. I wish they were successful here, and I wish the cost of living and the cost of goods wasn't as high, is not as high here, but it is. And so we have to do the best with what we've been given. And I feel like I've got multiple generations of blessings that I now have to manage. And I want to do my best so that my son and his kid and my daughter and their kids have the same opportunities that I had growing up. And so if agriculture fails in California completely, it's not going to be because I sat around and did nothing.
Do you feel like you have a good support system with other farmers, other young farmers?
Yeah, I feel like this Young Farmers and Ranchers program that's in Fresno County and that is statewide and countrywide does a really good job of empowering the next generation with that same kind of fire, maybe that you hear in my voice. Like, I can say be passionate about it, but once you give young farmers and ranchers and it doesn't have to be a farmer and rancher. It can be a young agriculturalist, a young PCA, or a young kid coming out of college that's going into agricultural finance or some. It's just, if you have a tie to agriculture, a young farmer and rancher program makes perfect sense to you, because they are the next generation of ag fighters and agvocates, more or less, to use a term that's been thrown around in agriculture, right? And so the Young Farmers and Ranchers is a leadership development program for 18 to 35 year olds to to say, hey, this is why, look, this is why we care about ag. Why do you care about ag? It may be a different reason, but having that same passion is why this organization exists, in my opinion. You know, it's creating the next generation of people that are, of young people that are going to take our state, our industry to the next level.
Do you have in mind goals or steps that people, not just you, but that you can, you know, encourage other people to do? Or do you have an idea of what needs to be done to make it possible for people to continue farming in California?
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is get involved somewhere. Where is where you're passionate, but be involved. Don't just say, you can't stay at home and say, man, for us, nothing's happening. If you're not willing to actually get out and engage and do something about it, it's like not voting for a politician and then complaining about the person you didn't vote for. It's like, well, you don't have skin in the game. And I feel like if you're a farmer or a rancher or a PCA or a agronomist or a water or an irrigation specialist, you've got some sort of skin in the game because your livelihood is based on agriculture. So if there is something that you can do to make it better, then get involved. That's the biggest thing. Because the people that show up are the people that will – all you have to do is show up. Those people are the people that are going to affect change. If you show up, you have a good heart, and you serve the organization that you're involved with, and not try and run, take like run, what's the word? What am I trying to say? Not try and run it or be the front of it, but really just try and say, how can I serve this organization? I promise that whatever you're involved in will be better. It will be better in the short run and in the long run.
And then if you can have a message for the next generation or two generations down the road, if you were in your time machine, you got to go and you got to talk to them, what would you want them to know about your generation of farmers?
What I would want them to know is that the people that cared the most, they fought. They're the ones fighting for agriculture in the state. And they're taking personal time away from their family to make that next generation better. And so if I'm a 60-year-old and I got to talk to my 30-year-old self, I would say prioritize your life, right? God, family, country, and then make sure that in the family that they know that the family came first and that you did everything you could to support them. And if that meant getting involved in agriculture or getting involved in local politics or getting involved in whatever you feel led to, then, but don't stop fighting. That's the biggest thing, is if you stop, the things you're fighting for will lose.
That's our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to hear more about, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.